Parks, Jeff Hagener, about his return to the post. The Yellowstone County Sheriff says a deputy shot and killed a man who escaped from Montana State Prison. Sheriff Mike Linder says an autopsy will be conducted to confirm that Dean Randolph Jess was the man killed. Linder says the man was stopped in a stolen Jeep today at an intersection near Billings Walmart. Shots were fired when Jess refused to leave the vehicle and moved a handgun toward a deputy. Jess was working for the Deer Lodge Prison's motor vehicle maintenance on a service call Monday when he escaped. His vehicle was found about 1.5 miles from the prison. A ground and air search turned up no sign of him. The 42-year-old Jess was sentenced to 55 years in prison for a 2004 Park County offense.
And in other news from around the state, the Missoula County Dispatch typically sees a spike in the calls of the 4th of July. But yesterday, the center took less calls than the year before.
273-36-289. Reported DOC at
West. Last night, we're still getting numbers in, but we had about 99 calls for service, which is down from the year before when we had about 160.
Missoula County's Director of Emergency Management, Chris Lunsberry, oversees the 911 center, which for 1 week out of the year is also the firework hotline.
10-4. I'm showing city holds one.
911 dispatcher Autumn Agers has a small orange sticky note as a reminder on the middle one of her three monitors.
If someone calls in the 911 and wants to complain about fireworks, we do need to refer them to the firework hotlines to get people used to using the phone number.
Both phone numbers go to the same place, sometimes the exact same place.
People call 911 and you say you have to call the fireworks hotline. And then you hang up and proceed to pick up the fireworks hotline. And I hope they don't recognize your voice.
She's been a dispatcher for almost 6 years and knows it's not a job for everyone.
Some people don't understand what they're getting into taking the job, the stress.
Because they are put into situations where they hear things, they don't see them, but they hear things that they may or may not want to necessarily have to hear.
This year, there wasn't anything nearly that serious, but with the weekend ahead, there's still some unknowns.
We'll find out whether that uptick up to 99 continues tonight, Friday night, as we head into the weekend.
The firework hotline will be open through Sunday. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Ruth Eddy.
For the past 2 years, Bozeman has held the Montana Pride Celebration, but this year the town recently hosted Interchange, a festival dedicated to engage conversations about equality and human rights. The festival collaborated with Bozeman organizations to offer educational opportunities, such as the effects of chemicals on humans and environmental health, racism and human trafficking, and homosexuality in the Bible. Interchange also hosted a drag show, a parade, and a hip-hop concert. At the parade, hula hoopers, belly dancers, drag queens, and even a cardboard robot carried rainbow flags and signs. Michael Groby helped start P-Flags, or Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, in Bozeman, and held her sign in support.
It says, "I have a dream that one day my children will be judged not by who they love, but by the content of their character."
Two plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Montana for Equal Marriage Rights, Stacy Hagel and Mary Leslie, carried umbrellas under the hot sun and wore sunglasses and rainbow sashes. They discussed last week's Supreme Court ruling on DOMA and Prop 8.
It's just incredible. I'm emotional. So we still have work to do here in Montana. Obviously, we have to have relationship equity, but at least on a federal level, lots of people's lives changed dramatically on Wednesday. We're so happy.
We're so happy for them.
The founder and director of Interchange, Tate Chamberlain, says he wants Interchange to give people a social experience and for all communities to walk away with a sense of pride and confidence.
Of course, I want to see a better world for everyone, but I was a teen who attempted suicide, and gay teenagers and kids have a 4 times higher suicide rate, which is really unfortunate. But I think it's the simple things like being able to talk about it. There's a lot of small communities that aren't necessarily open to that discussion yet, and there's a lot of kids that are really, really affected by it, because, you know, they'll fall in love for the first time. You know, it might be with their best friend, and that's what happened to me in high school. And you really don't have anyone to talk to or anywhere to go, and it's kind of that train wreck of first love.
Chamberlain wants Interchange, like its logo of colorful crisscrossing lines, to represent everyone connecting through education and music. He says the festival isn't so much about politics.
It's the thought that politics will play its role, and, you know, it needs to be influenced, but the social side, which is very, very complementary to politics, is, you know, it's being left out, I think. And so our goal is to bring that social awareness, because nothing is a better sales pitch than really experiencing it. You can listen to it on the radio, you can read it in newspapers, and you can, you know, form your own opinions like that. But unless you really live it, then it's not nearly as potent.
Interchange plans be held annually and adopt current human rights issues to discuss and influence.
Making sure kids get fed healthy food is the goal behind free meal programs at school. Making sure they continue getting healthy meals through the summer is the goal behind a federal grant that's covering the cost of summertime free meal programs in communities across Montana. Flathead reporter Catchin Fry has more from one of those communities.
On a grassy, shady spot at Woodland Park in Kalispell, kids are following a Zumba instructor in the dance exercise. Other kids are still eating lunch.
We have local beef from Lower Valley Meats, and it is cheeseburgers. We got watermelon, strawberries, a spinach salad, milk, cookie.
Sheila Music supervises the Woodland Park breakfast and lunch serving site as part of the summer meals program. Music says she's serving more than 50 kids breakfast and 100 lunches at this site daily.
The goal is to feed kids when school's out, so kids around the community that don't have the fundings or have food in their house, they can come over and any of our sites and have free breakfast and lunch.
I am Dan Zorn. I'm the assistant superintendent of the Kalispell Public Schools. On behalf of Dr. Schottel, our superintendent, and the Kalispell School Board, we're just honored to be here and just so pleased with this event.
Assistant Superintendent Dan Zorn says this is the second year running that Kalispell has received funding to operate the program. The summer meals program started about a month ago, but a recent kickoff event at Woodland Park aims to let even more people know that it's available. The U.S. Department of Agriculture funnels money for the summer food program to the states, where in Montana it is distributed through the State Office of Public Instruction. Zorn says more than 45% of the students in the Kalispell School District alone qualify for free or reduced lunches during the school year.
So that's, you know, that's not necessarily the poverty line, but it's pretty darn close. So we have a lot of kids out there in need. And in this program that they've put together with the summer food program is just a great example of the community, the state, coming together to try to serve the needs of those kids.
Food Corps service member Katie Wheeler is involved in getting local produce into these meals.
And you know, it can't always be local produce, but in the summer it's a lot easier for it to be local produce, so that's kind of why this is my favorite program.
Wheeler works with School District 5 of Kalispell.
So Food Corps' mission is to connect kids to healthier foods and to create good relationships with healthy food. And so through that, we work to increase the amount of local food that goes through K-12 cafeterias, as well as build and maintain school gardens for education and also teach nutrition education.
In Kalispell, Flathead High School serves breakfast, Elrod Elementary serves lunch, and breakfast and lunch are available at Woodland Park at the ice skating rink. You can text LUNCH to 877-877 to find a summer food program near your community. Meals are free for children 18 years and younger, and you don't need to sign up. Organizers say you just need to show up to a registered site, and kids eat free. No questions asked. Catherine Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Clear, cool rivers flow like arteries across much of western Montana. Fed by numerous tributaries starting high in the mountains from melted snow, our rivers are alluring for many reasons. To name a few, spring provides prime whitewater boating conditions, while summer draws tubers, jumpers, and line casters. For most, the danger of our rivers are obvious during their peak flows, but hazards exist throughout summer and into fall. Justin Steck has more.
If you've lived in Missoula for very long, you've probably floated down one of the easily accessible rivers in the area. Or at least you've been invited. A day on the river can be like a day on the slopes. There's the feeling that it just doesn't get any better. That's part of the reason many of us live here. Training officer for the Missoula City Fire Department, Matt Curran, says recreating on Montana's waterways comes with some risks that must be considered.
Biggest elephant in the room would just be the water temperature. So here in Montana, in Missoula specifically, we consider anything in the 50-degree range to be cold water.
That range can be found nearly year-round in many rivers. Even a competent swimmer may lose the ability to coordinate movement with their arms and legs in cold water. Kearns lists other considerations for the pre-excursion checklist.
We get lots of snags coming down. These cottonwoods along the banks really have weak root systems and like to come tumbling down and create some strainers and some sweepers.
That's river speak for an object in the river that a craft can be pinned against, creating a danger, and an overhanging object that can sweep a person out of their craft.
And in addition to that, we've got lots of irrigation that happens throughout the state of Montana, so there's going to be those low head dams and diversion dams and weirs and things like that that can create some pretty unique hydraulics and some pretty specific situations that need to be watched out for.
Sadly, we recently learned how these situations can lead to a loss of life. A 6-year-old girl died on the Bitterroot River when the boat she was in capsized going over a diversion dam. Everyone in the craft was following the number one rule of wearing a personal flotation device, or PFD, but there are no certainties. All we can do is, as Kearns puts it,
know the stretch of river you're going to be on, be a savvy boater, and just try and stack the deck in your favor.
Owner of Liquid Therapy Montana, Vinny Nuzzo, is new to the river toy rentals, but not to Montana's rivers. He expounds on some of the basics that he talks about with his customers.
Does your experience and ability level, you know, meet where you're going to go? And does the type of gear you're wearing meet where you're going to go?
Knowing your capacities is best accomplished when not incapacitated. Substances that impair function and response should not be taken when on the river. Proper clothing and footwear are also part of a successful day on the water. Nuzzo says even stretches of river that don't have a lot of whitewater can pose challenges.
The Bitterroot and the Upper Clark Fork, those rivers have braided channels, so crisscrossing channels where you have a lot of decisions, which way am I going to go? You better just get to the bank if you can't see on a blind corner and scout it if you haven't run it, because these things change over and over again from day to day, week to week on the runoff season. You know, you need to find out what may be blocking that channel.
Note, approved PFDs must be worn to be effective. Also, watercraft should have a simple throw bag that can be tossed to someone in need of rescue. Kern says if you're going to be spending much time on the river, it makes sense to take a whitewater safety class. Since water recreation is a tradition for many families in Montana, it's a good idea to get children comfortable with water early on.
You know, I would say get your kids into a swimming class as early as possible. 3 and 4 years old, I don't think, is out of line to get these kids exposed to water, just because it's so much of our summertime recreation.
The arrival of 90-plus degree days means the rivers will start to fill with crowds looking to beat the heat. We owe it to each other to make each day out on the river a day to remember for the joy it brings to our lives. That means respecting the power of the rivers as well as each other. Please be safe this summer. From Montana Public Radio, I'm Justin Steck.
The recent heat wave has broken, but the summer is young and plenty more hot days await us before it's over. With that in mind, people are reminded to stay hydrated and not overexert during the hottest parts of the day. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals also hopes we consider the safety of our faithful four-legged friends. PETA's Wendy Wagner reminds us that bringing your dog in your car to run a few errands, even if on days like this, which seem so much cooler than the wickedly hot days we experienced earlier this week, could prove to be a fatal decision.
Never a good idea. I mean, on a 78-degree day, the temperature inside a shaded car is 90 degrees, while the inside of a car parked in the sun can reach 160 degrees in just a matter of minutes. That means animals can succumb to heat stroke in just 15 minutes, you know, the time it takes for someone to just pop into the grocery store really quickly. It's extra tough for them because they don't perspire through their skin like people do. They can only cool themselves by panting and sweating through their paw pads. So really, the most important thing people can do is to keep their dogs indoors. Leave them at home. If you must keep them outside for a long time, avoid the hottest part of the day. Always provide shade and water in a kiddie pool, and keep drinking water in an anchored bucket or a heavy bowl that won't tip over.
Symptoms of heat stroke are present in many ways in dogs: agitation, heavy panting, vomiting, lethargy, a dark tongue, and a general lack of coordination. If you recognize these symptoms, quickly get your animal to a vet. Wagner says never force your dog to join your exercise routine during the hottest parts of the day. That includes leashing them up for a run or a bicycle ride.
You never want to take your dog jogging, except on cool mornings or evenings. You don't want to force exercise. On long walks, you want to rest them often, take plenty of water, and, you know, hot pavement can also burn dogs' paws, so you want to choose shady, grassy routes. They may not seem like they're suffering, but they often can be.
Wagner adds that transporting your dogs in the bed of your pickup is inherently dangerous, even under the best of weather conditions, as they can jump or be thrown from the vehicle after even a minor accident. The heat and sunlight adds an extra risk, as their paw pads can easily burn on the hot metal.
Jeff Hagner has now been working as the director of the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for 6 months under the administration of new governor Steve Bullock. It's not the first time he has served in the post. He spent 4 years as FWP director under Governor Judy Martz and then remained there for the first 4 years of the Schweitzer administration until he was replaced by Joe Maurier in 2008. He says Capitol reporter Dan Boyce in tonight's feature interview that the job feels pretty much the same this time around.
Out there, some of the issues that I guess I had hoped that maybe we're done with, but the position feels very similar to what it was before. But some of the issues that are out there, particularly like landowner relations and some of the concerns and whatnot were expressed by the legislature about our land holdings and land acquisitions, and some of that I think are at a much higher controversial level at this point than they were in the past. So those are some key issues that we need to look at going into the future that weren't there, I guess, when I had left, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Of course, speaking about the acquisition of the Milk River Ranch, what do you think the department can learn from that situation and perhaps needs to do different moving forward?
Well, I think that, we need to be, even though we go through a tremendous amount of public process, I mean, I think we can be even more transparent. And I think the other things is that we were just up in Havre for the last, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week for our commission meeting. And part of the purpose of that was to go up there because people felt on the local level that they'd really not been heard and that the commission had not actually had an opportunity to go up and tour that property and look at the property and hear their concerns about that. This is after the fact, but we did go up there with the commission. We had an open house. We sat down and visited with those folks and said that, we can do a better job in the future. Do more opportunity for the public to comment, go and view those properties and talk to those folks, before something's done. In this case, since the acquisition's already been made, what we're looking at and what we told those people is that, we can argue all you want about appraised value of the property and how it fits in with the neighborhood, all those kind of things. But the reality is that the purchase has been made. The property now belongs to the department. That part that is Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, there's another portion that Department of Natural Resources and Conservation owns. But where we're going from here is how do we work with that neighborhood? We understand they have some concerns, the way the property boundaries lie. There's some inholdings, some other issues, and there's some concern about how much hunting pressure and whatnot may go on with that property and how, hunters and sportsmen will actually be using that property. As far as roads, a lot of the surrounding land is cropland, so they obviously have concerns about trespassing about cropland. But there's also that concerns about will they get a huge influx of people. We are dedicated very much to working with that local community. So how can we be the best neighbors? Maybe it means doing some exchanging of land, or perhaps there's some other inholdings in there that we may want to purchase to make that more of a solid block of land. But we also need to look at, do we need to take some measures in there? Other wildlife management areas, we may have it more restricted as far as permits to limit the number of people in there, limit the access points, those kind of things, to just make sure that we are being good neighbors with those that surround us, because they're extremely important to us as far as the overall habitat management, as well as managing the hunting opportunity that may be there.
At the beginning of the Bullock administration here, the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has split apart the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission into a Fish and Wildlife Commission and then to a separate Parks Commission. What changes do you think that will bring for the department overall?
Well, actually what's happened there, and it was by legislation, that separated off. So as of July 1st, we will have a Fish and Wildlife Commission and then a Parks and Recreation Board. And basically the makeup of them as far as districts, there will be 5 members on each of those, are the same districts. But the emphasis was there is that it's been felt for many years that the park side of things probably didn't get as much emphasis because there's a lot of fish and wildlife issues that are out there and that, we're really trying to enhance and let people know what we have as far as our parks resources. So it was felt important that we have a Parks and Recreation Board that deals specifically with those issues so they can spend much more time in it, do more development level that they're looking at as far as knowledge of the parks, taking a look at are we in the best position that we could be. We have 52 state parks at the current time. Some people would tell you that's way more than we can actually handle. Others would say as well, it would be nice if we had more parks. And we hear that fairly regularly from constituents in the area that say, we'd like to have a state park in our area because it does help their local economies. But what we're trying to do is put more emphasis out there, more education, I guess you'd say, with a lot of folks of what the state parks have to offer. They are a tremendous opportunity. They're not obviously a national park. But we think they're very important for the state park level, particularly for state residents. Gives an opportunity close by to home, pretty inexpensive. Your license plate, if you're a Montana resident, you have that option with the license plate. You're free to go into those parks. We do have camping fees for those that are camping, but we have all kinds of things out there as parks, as whether it's scenic, there's paleontological. We've got things like Lewis and Clark State Caverns. We've got several beautiful parks right around Flathead Lake that are very highly utilized. We want people to know about that and know what those parks have to offer. And so that Parks and Recreation Board would be more of an emphasis to do that. But again, not taking away anything from the fish and wildlife side, because that's still an extremely important part of Montana's heritage, what a lot of people are looking for.
Moving back to some of those testy wildlife issues, mm-hmm. Of course, wolves, a constant hot topic, mm-hmm. and almost in every decision that's made around wolves is controversial. The department, again, is considering more liberal wolf hunting rules for this upcoming season again. At some point, is the department moving toward a sort of homeostasis between those disparate sides on this very complex issue?
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to look at it. We are trying to look at something as one. We recognize that wolves are part of the ecosystem now, part of the landscape. But there is a question about how many wolves is acceptable. In some parts of the state, that's not very many, and it's really not conducive because they get in more problem with livestock, those kind of things. But other parts of the state, you know, wolves are more acceptable. But for all of the years from when wolves were reintroduced up until just this last year, we saw a pretty steady increase in the population of wolves. And we actually met all the requirements for the recovery of wolves that's required by the Fish and Wildlife Service for them to be delisted back in 2002. Well, we weren't able to actually get the full delisting and the control, which allowed for us to do hunting and trapping, which we felt was appropriate as far as to keep the numbers at a level that was acceptable. We didn't get the ability to do that until 2009. So that growth curve was pretty substantial and built up a lot more than I guess we would have liked to have seen. This last year, like I said, after three hunting seasons that had been in place and one trapping season, was the first year we've actually seen the numbers of wolves in the state of Montana, the way we measure it, dropped. The previous year, it showed 2012, our numbers showed a minimum of 650-some wolves. This last year, I believe it was 625. So we saw a reduction in there. And what we look at that is that it's hopefully stabilizing the level some. We still believe that that population is a little high. For the overall, so we would like to reduce it a little bit more, and that's what's reflected in what you see there with the more liberal season opportunity. Legislation was passed that allowed for a greater bag limit, allowed for several other aspects that will allow for us, we think, to take better control of the numbers of wolves and make it more acceptable to keep them at a level that is acceptable to the majority of folks in the state. But you're right. There are people on both sides that are saying we're not aggressive enough because they are damaging elk herd numbers, deer herd numbers in various places. But we also hear from a lot of other people is that we're probably doing too much. We should allow more wolves to come into a lot of those areas. But so we are trying to meet somewhere of that in-between balance. And we are trying to balance that with our other fish and wildlife resources, particularly those larger ungulate herds. And in those areas where there are livestock, is we definitely have a concern for livestock producers that are experiencing depredation from wolves that, you know, that we think there's just too many in some of those areas.
In terms of your priorities and looking forward here in the next years, are there projects that you're looking at and priorities you want to pursue that maybe the average Montanan isn't even on their radar, something that is a major piece of the puzzle?
Well, there are three major pieces that I would say right now that come down as actually a directive from the governor to the new commission that's in place now, too. And that had to do earlier, we talked about the Milk River, and that's one of the issues where it's spurred up a lot of what I would say is landowner relations controversy. And that isn't really just between the department and landowners. I think it also includes sportsmen and everybody else that wants to utilize the resources that we manage. A second element that he made was very clear is that because of that acquisition and several other acquisitions, a lot of people are very concerned about how much land does the department has. How good a job are you doing at managing all that land, and how much more land you're going to buy in the future? The third element that the governor made very clear is that we are very highly dependent on our license fees. Many people have a misperception that we get general fund dollars, which is taxpayer dollars, your income tax, that kind of thing. We don't. We get a very small amount of that for our aquatic invasive species program. Virtually everything else in the department is funded by license fees from somebody who buys a hunting license or a fishing license. Or we get federal dollars that match that are excise tax on sporting arms or fishing goods. And because we're so dependent on license fees, and typically our process has been that we look at a 10-year cycle, is that we raise fees once about every 10 years, we build up a fund balance and then spend it down, we're at the end of that 10-year cycle. We need to take a look at, okay, right now we currently have over 100 different license types that go to 60 different accounts, and out of those, there's a substantial amount of those that are free or discounted licenses. We're not keeping up with inflation and other things, the programs that have been put forth by the legislature. So we need to look at, do we need to raise fees? How much do we need to raise fees? And where do we want that money directed? So we're undertaking an effort, and the Environmental Quality Council is kind of dovetailing with that. We're going to work together to take a look at, we can come back to the 2015 legislative session with a proposal as far as what we should do with license fees. So those are the three most important elements that the governor has outlined. But they're never ending. Let's put it that way. Montanans and the non-residents that come here are very passionate about those resources, and they would all like to see those resources to the best that they would like to see them. And that's difficult to meet everybody's expectations. We try as hard as we can. We try to be as open to the public as we can. But it is a major job and a major effort.
Major challenge.
Major.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I've been speaking with Jeff Hagener, the director of the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Dan.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight expect mostly clear skies with scattered thunderstorms and heavy rainfall. Lows will be in the upper 40s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s. For central and southwest Montana, expect mostly to partly cloudy skies this weekend with the scattered showers and thunderstorms, with nighttime lows around 50 degrees and daytime highs around 75 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Olivia Riuta.
The summer of 2013 is shaping up to be anything but slow in the news department. Last week alone, the U.S. Supreme Court issued three huge rulings, and the U.S. Senate passed comprehensive immigration reform. And hopefully this is just the beginning, and Congress will take the opportunity to stay inside amidst the heat and humidity in Washington, D.C., and get down to business. Because they have a hefty to-do list between the sequester, the federal budget, and tax reform. So in a Congress where legislating and nonpartisanship are not their strong suit, let's hope that it turns out to be a scorcher of a summer in our nation's capital. But first, let's remind ourselves how we got here. In 2011, we had a fierce partisan fight over raising our country's debt limit, and Congress passed the Budget Control Act, which not only raised the debt ceiling, it cut $900 billion over 10 years, and it also created the ill-fated supercommittee and the subsequent across-the-board spending cuts that we now call the sequester. The cuts in sequestration were meant to be so clunky and such a bad way to balance a budget that there was no way that Congress would let it stand. Well, they were wrong. So earlier this year, we found ourselves standing on the so-called fiscal cliff, a combination of those automatic across-the-board spending cuts and also some tax increases. You may have noticed that your paycheck got a little smaller because you started paying more in payroll taxes again this year. Today, we are 4 months into the sequester. Congress and the president need to soon agree on appropriations for our budget that begins on October 1st. And once again, we are inching toward the debt ceiling. In addition, last week, our own Senator Baucus, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, along with Senator Orrin Hatch, ranking member of the committee, began outlining their efforts to create sweeping reforms of our tax code. They're taking a, quote, blank slate approach. Get rid of the countless expenditures and loopholes in our tax code, start from scratch, and build anew. Sequestration, the federal budget, and now tax reform. These are big and complicated policy discussions and can feel a little overwhelming. But if Congress is going to get them done, they're going to need to hear from us. So here are a few clear principles that should lead these policy discussions and drive outcomes as Congress sets out on their to-do list. One, we need to raise revenue. Two, we need to invest in the programs and services that strengthen our families and communities. And three, we need to move beyond the ideology of spending cuts and deficit reduction and start building for the future of our country. Revenue. We can't balance the budget on cuts alone. We need to ask wealthy individuals and corporations who can afford to pay more to put a little more money in. Most recently, we heard about our friends at Apple, who over 4 years earned $30 billion and managed to pay no income tax. It's high time we get rid of tax loopholes and tax breaks for corporations and wealthy Americans. Since 2011, we've seen $3.6 billion in deficit reduction over the next decade, with 80% of that reduction coming from spending cuts and only 20% from revenue increases. These spending cuts and deficit reductions are damaging Montana communities. Right now, Head Start programs across our state are turning children away. They're laying off workers and making it harder than ever for hardworking, low-income families to get by. Head Start allows parents to go to work, to go to school. It helps families make ends meet. It makes our communities strong and our economy stronger. But denying low-income kids access to an early education program that is proven to help close the achievement gap is just the tip of the iceberg of cuts that include education, job training programs, work study, Meals on Wheels, and the list goes on and on and on. Revenue allows us to make investments in the programs and services that we know make our families, communities, and state stronger. This cuts-centric approach means that we are not only hurting our children and families today, but are also setting ourselves back in the long run. For example, we know that the Earned Income Tax Credit and the Child Tax Credit not only help working poor families make ends meet at tax time, but they improve children's school performance and future success. And every year, the Earned Income Tax Credit and Child Tax Credit lift about 15,000 Montana kids out of poverty. This is a smart investment and should be strengthened. Our federal deficit has been used to justify an all-access pass to make cuts to programs and services. And right now, we're seeing some of the fastest deficit reduction in our nation's history, when so many families and communities are still far from recovered from the Great Recession. So, at a time when we're celebrating the history and promise of America, let's be bold and dare to invest in our country, in our communities, and our people. Let's dare to invest in our future through education, infrastructure, jobs, access to healthcare, and the programs and services that ensure that nobody on your street or in your community has to fall through the cracks. This summer, I'll be watching the weather in Washington and hoping that Congress has no other option but to stay inside and get to work. I'm Olivia Riuta with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a fabulous holiday weekend.
Olivia Riuta is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtbr.org. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.